Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Yes, it is I, Stephen Scott, back with you once again. Robin Christofferson's over there somewhere. Hello, Robin.
Hello.
And we also have a special guest this week, and that is David Woodbridge from Vision Australia. Hello to you, David.
I'd probably be sound Australian and say good day, mate.
Oh, I knew you'd say that. Should I call you Sheila for the rest of the programme? Is that appropriate?
No.
Right, look, let's get into it. There's so much to talk about this week. The reason you're here, David, is, because you know stuff. And we like people here who know stuff. That's not my role here. I'm just the face of the operation. And Robin is generally the brains. So you can be brains too, okay? That's how it works here.
I'm certainly not the face, that's for sure.
I think some would argue about that with me as well. But anyway, let's get into it because it is 10 years since VoiceOver landed on the iPhone. And what's the official date, David? It's June 19th or something?
June 19th at the Worldwide Developers Conference, it was announced, and of course it came out about a week later or so, I believe, in certain countries, including Australia.
So we're going to talk about that today because obviously a momentous thing, and it doesn't seem like it was 10 years ago, it seems like it's been here a lot longer than that, but we are going to talk a little bit about that today, and we're also going to focus on some of the things we didn't get to last week on WWDC. I am still excited about voice control, despite a mixture of people telling me that I'm crazy, and that's not just because of my views on WWDC's voice control, but actually because it's not built for blind people. This is not a blind person accessibility tool, but I have my beliefs as to why I think it could be really good for us. So we're going to talk about that. We've got your emails coming up as well, lots of you getting in touch as always, and we're going to be talking about audio editing in the emails today, because one of our listeners has been trying out something that I mentioned on our show couple of weeks back, and it didn't work for them. Oh dear. We're going to hear about that and why, and what the alternatives might be. So that's coming up on today's Tech Talk. But first, let's talk about VoiceOver at 10. Well, on the iPhone, at least. David Woodbridge, of course, you're a guy who many people know as the voice of reason when it comes to accessible technology. Not a label I have ever been given. For obvious reasons, perhaps. But it is an interesting anniversary because we are here 10 years on from the point where, if you think about maybe the weeks, the months, the year leading up to this point 10 years ago, a lot of us blind people sitting there saying, okay, so this is a piece of glass with a single button on it on the front of the screen. How are we going to use this? And the answer was, well, with great difficulty, up until June 19th, 2009. David, what was your first thoughts, if I can take you back to that time, what was your first thoughts when you learned that VoiceOver was landing on the iPhone?
Well, my first thought was, isn't this extremely exciting? Followed by my boss, I can still remember her statement back then was, oh, look, it's really just another mainstream company doing a little bit of speech for blind people. It's going to be a bit more of a gimmick. It won't be productive. Don't waste your time really going to visit Apple because they're just going to show you the bits that actually work. And it was very negative. And when I was talking to people around the office, they were very negative about, it's a glass screen, it's a graphics user interface. And remember the days when we first went from DOS to Windows 3.11 and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, my goodness, what a bunch of negative people. And but back in that stage, I was also on Twitter, and just the amount of negativity about, it was good enough for good old talks on the Nokia. Why can't it be good enough for Apple to make a real phone rather than a touchscreen one? So there's quite a bit of negativity around at the time.
Was that your experience, Robin, or were you more positive about it? Or was your, well, the people around you as positive or negative as that?
Certainly there was this, not maybe scepticism or perhaps worry that this glass screen wasn't going to be for us. So yeah, definitely, the keyboard was our friend at the time, and blind people and low vision people are huge fans of the keyboard. You know, we do things with keystroke alternatives. We're good touch typists. And the thought of not having a keyboard at all was very disconcerting, shall we say. So yeah, I definitely remember that. And I also remember when I first got one, which wasn't until a year later with the iPhone 4. And I was trying to think just a minute ago, why on earth I waited? You know, what was I thinking in that first year? Probably just, you know, waiting to see how it would pan out. And obviously VoiceOver support has improved year on year since then. So, you know, it's not the same beast that now that it was back then. It's improved greatly. So things weren't quite so straightforward back then. And I do remember when I did get my 4, which was the second phone after the 3GS that had VoiceOver, it was a little bit of a, well, it was a huge learning curve and a bit of an uphill struggle. The keyboard entry was quite problematic, I remember at the time. So yeah, I mean, I had an adjustment period, and I like to think that I'm quite technical and certainly enthusiastic about tech. So I was very motivated to crack this thing. Oh, that doesn't sound appropriate, does it, with a glass screen? But you know, touch wood, I have never actually broken a phone. My kids have broken many, many phones. But so yeah, there was a huge learning curve. And that skepticism was around for a very long time. You don't actually hear it now, of course, or at least...
I remember it very well, actually. And there's various people I remember at the time saying exactly the same as the things you were hearing, David, which was, it might sound good, but truthfully, it's not going to be feasible for me. People just didn't like the idea of a glass touchscreen being accessible. They couldn't understand how it would be accessible, how practical it would be. David, when you got your hands on it for the very first time and you were sitting there, and of course we're talking early, early days here when it just launched, what was your impression?
I was quite amazed about how well Apple did. And even looking back on it, I thought, how could the engineers have thought about something that was so flexible and worked so well? I remember the keyboard being a little bit iffy because back then it was just the one finger double tap to activate each letter. Mm. You could also drag your finger around as well. But just the navigation bit about dragging your finger around, one finger flick left or right, one finger double tap, as long as it was the last item that was heard on the screen, you could one finger double tap anywhere, which is still quite true today. So even that consistency from, 10 years ago was absolutely amazing. So I actually went down on the Monday after it was released in Australia on the Friday, and I sat with one of the product managers at Apple for about 4 hours just going, oh my God, I actually can't believe I'm just using a flat piece of glass and it's talking to me and it's built in and I can take it out of the box. I can run it. Back then we had to use it with iTunes to invoke or to check the checkbox for VoiceOver. But I just kept thinking, I feel like I'm in a bit of a dream state here because I just can't believe some company, a mainstream company, has done things so well. So I was really, really impressed. The fact that you could use the phone to make phone calls, you could use Safari to navigate the web, we had Mail, God help us, we had the App Store. And I think within the first week, I think I was just downloading app after app after app because I just wanted to see how far I could push this thing to really, really do things. And it was funny because in the first couple of weeks, we had a lot of interest at Vision Australia. And I kept answering the same question over and over again. So in my defense, that's when I really got stuck into podcasting. So the first 2 or 3 weeks, I think I actually did 26 podcasts. And I can remember thinking when I got to about the 24th one, I thought, oh God, it's a phone. I've just done 24 podcasts and everything else except making a phone call.
Who makes phone calls?
So that became the 25th of the 26th podcast.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because that's the way all of the smartphone technology has gone. Despite us calling it a phone, despite it being called an iPhone, a lot of people really use it as an actual phone, whether they're blind or not. I remember when it came out, and I thought this is going to be really interesting, but I was at that kind of midway point with my vision where I didn't really need to use VoiceOver at that point, although I probably should have started using it. Do you know what I mean? I was kind of in that middle point where it was sort of, if the text could just be a bit bigger, and that was always my thing at that point, could the text just be bigger? And it just wasn't. That was something which was not really an option until much later. when they brought in the dynamic text options, and then that could replicate in certain apps and all of that. And by that point, I was using VoiceOver, so it was kind of useless to me by that point. But, you know, great for anybody out there who's got low vision. So, you know, the phone is much more accessible now. And, we talk about VoiceOver as the gold standard now, pretty much, at least on the iPhone. If you're any... And I don't think you just need to be a fanboy either. I mean, I think or a fangirl or a fan anything. You can be into Apple. You can love using that system. I don't hear that from the Android world as much, and I know we get emails about it, and I know we get loads of people saying, oh, you're wrong, Stephen, you're wrong. Android's amazing, and it has improved a lot. But is it fair to say that despite all of the innovations on the Android or the Google side, that it's still a good few years behind, which actually marries up with the age of it?
I strongly believe it's still, maybe not a couple of years behind. I'd say maybe 12 months behind, because I know when I'm using my beloved Samsung S10 with either voice assistant or with TalkBack, there are still sometimes it loses focus, the scroll doesn't work, the screen locks up occasionally. I don't know if it's an Android or the screen reader. Buttons don't talk properly. When I double tap somewhere, it goes and taps somewhere else. So there's still very small things that, yes, I can work around them, but it's certainly not as straightforward as the iPhone. And of course, the other thing about Android, which I find trying to help people out, is because Android is so different, different versions, different phones and everything else. What works on one person's phone doesn't always work on somebody else's phone. So,
but interestingly, though, David, that's the really interesting thing about, I found this as well. You know, using Android, yeah, it is slightly different. You know, like you say, you'll double tap on something, it double taps something else. That's annoyed me a few times. But then my iPhone's done that as well. And I think, why does that not annoy me in the way that annoys me with Android?
You've got a broken iPhone then.
Well, I wonder about it, Robin. You know, it's like, why is that? Why is it that, you know, I can accept the flaws, and there are many on VoiceOver. Mm. I accept them there, but I don't accept them with Android. Why am I?
I think sometimes some particular apps, particularly ones that use a web view, can be pretty janky. And I'm looking at you, Amazon, with your apps. Apparently, though, in iOS 13, and we'll get onto this later, there's been some major improvements in Safari, and that will actually be replicated in every app that uses a web view. So we're actually going to see some improvements there. But yeah, there are some focus issues there sometimes, mostly in that I'm double tapping on you and you're supposed to be, activating, but you're not. But for me, the major catch up that Android still needs to do is in third party apps. And I think that's down to the toolkit or the development platform. So on the Mac, for example, Xcode and the inspectors and the general toolbox that developers use has had a lot of love in the accessibility realm, making sure that they are pushed towards creating apps out of the box without, a huge amount of kind of commitment on their part that will be accessible. So it feels like a much more fleshed out, accessible, inclusive, embracing environment, whereas with Android, it's still a tiny bit more of a Wild West scenario with third-party apps.
Actually, that's quite true, Robin, because I know with the there's an app that I use all the time in Sydney called TripView, which is a transport app for bus, ferry, and train. Now, the iOS version works beautifully. The same developers produced an Android version, and quite a few of the buttons, or some of the buttons in the Android version, say things like scan toolbar button or something else. So it's like, mate, can you make some changes to it? So when I am using my S10 on the train going into Sydney, I'd love to be able to use your app on Android, but I keep forgetting what scan toolbar button is sometimes.
And this brings me back to my first impressions of the iPhone way back, 9 years ago for me, is that, hey, I'm now using something mainstream that seems to work not only throughout its own operating system, but in these other apps that we've got access to as well. Because I was coming to the iPhone from a Nokia, a Series 60 phone that had, what was it called? Torx on it, I can't remember how much that was, a couple of hundred quid. And most of the operating system itself worked. None of the kind of, like I had Wayfinder and Wayfinder? And that was quite, as a talking GPS. It was a mainstream GPS because there were no specialist apps or very few at the time. And that kind of spoke well with Torx. So that was my biggest impression of voiceover on the iPhone was, hey, you know, I'm now using what everybody else is using and I'm able to use it with the built-in stuff and I've got all this choice. And most of it is, you know, I can now talk with other friends that are sighted about what they're using and I can use it too. You know, I can download the latest, greatest app. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, it was pretty amazing.
I think it's fascinating when we talk about the mainstreaming side of this. We've had the conversation before on the show. Would there be talkback on Android, Microsoft pushing more now to make a better screen reader for Windows if Apple had not gone down the route of putting VoiceOver on the iPhone? And I know that there's the argument around the legal side of this, especially in America, around education and the rights of Americans to have education available to them. And that's kind of what led to a lot of this accessibility coming in. So the answer is it probably would have happened anyway. But I think what you've got to do is perhaps detach the reality of the physical app, the VoiceOver that's built into the phone, and the experience. That's the difference, perhaps, between what Apple did and what others would have done had Apple not done it. Do you agree with that, Dave?
I do. And I also think, getting back to Robin's point too about apps, I mean, for the first time, really, we could use a whole range of apps. We didn't have to go out and buy special screen reading software. We didn't have to go and buy dedicated talking or large print apps to use with the mobile platform. So I just think from that point of view, that also opened it up very wide as well. And the fact that, you know, most of the time, I mean, I think, I downloaded a couple of hundred apps in the first week, a couple of days or so, and most of them I could use, which was quite remarkable. So again, because the developers were using the standard Apple developer toolkit, that's why it became so accessible. So I just think almost, you know, yes, you're correct. I think it would have happened anyway, but I think Apple doing what Apple did, I think gave it a good kickstart to the rest of the industry, whether it's Google or Amazon, sort of, Microsoft and so on, then it was like, well, we've really raised the bar here, guys. It's time for the rest of you to step up and actually play the game. And I think they have, and they certainly continue to do that. But I just think Apple was the bit of the gold standard. I mean, when I compare mobile phones, I'm always comparing Android to iPhone, not the other way around.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting look at it. I mean, Robin, from the third-party app point of view, so the apps that are developed by individual developers, not Apple themselves, that, of course, brought around, you know, and gave a lot of opportunity out there for lots of developers. But interestingly for us, the flip side for accessibility was that we were able to contact those developers, and if there was an issue, it could potentially be resolved. Now, some developers are better than others. Some know more about accessibility than others. Some are more willing to learn than others. I've had great experiences with developers, usually small developers, one-man band type operations where they, you know, will work away on an app and then, you know, deliver it to the app store. You go back and say, this isn't labeled, and they'll fix it. That changed because, I mean, you think about it, before that, we were dealing with big companies, you know, oh, Microsoft Word isn't accessible as accessible as we'd like. So we'll tell Microsoft about it and hope that within the next 20 years it gets fixed. That was another thing that changed and was a positive change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think it just depended from developer to developer as to how well they prioritized what us, you know, disabled people were feeding back
to them.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it was perfect by any stretch.
Yeah, and I've had very positive experiences as well with many that I've contacted. So yeah, totally agree there. And the fact that developing for iOS is so simple and very, you know, democratized. There are over a million developers, I think, now. And it's just amazing that they can crank out these apps, you know, very easily, and they fit niches that are just crying out to be filled by, you know, for disabled people or for whatever, you know, whatever your favorite hobby or pastime is, there'll be 1,000 apps that will be, you know, just down your alley. But I think one announcement at WWDC a week or so ago with Swift UI is going to actually make this even more easy for people, particularly people who are visually impaired, because you can now code things and Swift will handle the UI for you, will actually create a really nice looking app screen, app layout with sexy transitions and everything, and it will just look really professional and it will handle all of that for you. So I think we're going to see even more apps being developed by developers with disabilities, and of course they're going to be thinking about accessibility and they're going to be thinking about the niche use cases that disabled people have. So I'm really excited about the fact that this is only going to improve now going forward. It's really, really good.
Actually, the other thing that occurs to me too is that, you know, quite a few times the developers don't even think about the fact that a blind or low vision person would even be using their app in the first place. I remember there was a sort of very, I think it's still in the app store, I haven't used it for a while, but there's an app called Navigon, which is a GPS mainstream app mainly used for cars. And I can remember earlier on, I think it was just 2011 or 12 maybe, or a bit later, it had a feature which was called pedestrian mode with voice. So when you used it, of course, it told you to turn left and turn right. Now, in Navigon's wisdom, they decided, well, look, you know, if you're a sighted person and you're walking down the street, why the hell do you need this thing to tell you to turn left, because it's pretty obvious on the street signs? And when they took it off, I immediately, you know, quite a few other people emailed them straight away and went, what are you doing? This is one of the major apps that we use as people who are blind and low vision, because you can use it offline. You don't have to use your data, blah, blah, blah. And the right back went, oh my goodness, we never thought about the fact that that would have been a feature. Of course, it's logical now that you've explained it to us, that of course you want voice announcements when you turn left and right, when you're navigating, when you're walking. And they put it back in again. So I always say to people, even today, sometimes developers just don't think, or it doesn't occur to them. So don't assume they're being all horrible and nasty. Most of the time they haven't even thought about it. And just giving a bit of gentle feedback or getting a little bit more excited like I did that time seems to work quite nicely.
Absolutely.
I think it's interesting. I mean, without getting too philosophical about all of this, but I think in a way you kind of have to, because you need to realize that at the heart of all of this lie sighted people, right? So, you know, sighted people are making the apps and the main, you know, all of that. But what's interesting is that one of the concepts that Apple pushed here was this universal design concept, where, you know, think about the example that was given to me recently was like a building. You know, you don't think about how you get in the building, because there is a ramp, there are stairs, you know, inside there are stairs and a lift, possibly an escalator. You know, there are different options available to you. It's all part of universal design. So whoever you are, if you have a disability or not, you can access that building. And that's kind of the concept that Apple are probably is exactly the concept that Apple are going for here. No matter who you are, no matter if you have issues with being able to touch the screen, issues being able to see the screen, hear the phone, there is a design in that that makes it work for you. But for a developer, is making universal design available actually potentially a negative, where therefore people don't, because it's not up in front of them, that they have to think about these things, or that indeed these needs are there and what these needs mean? Does that actually cause a problem when it comes to developers creating apps and making them universally accessible?
I think it requires more effort and awareness. They obviously need to be aware that people have certain needs and kind of put in that extra little bit of work. But I mean, as AbilityNet bangs on about when at every opportunity, accessibility is now a thoroughly mainstream consideration. You know, we're all computing on the edge on, you know, bright sunny day, noisy environments, jogging in, you know, buses that are kind of jogging around or whatever it might be.
Don't jog in buses, that's not a right.
Juggling. So yeah, every single mobile phone user is in very real terms temporarily disabled on a daily basis. So it's definitely no longer. And we're seeing that with the accessibility features being brought up to the top level in iOS 13, you know, recognition of that priority, I think. So, and with voice control that I'm sure we're going to talk about a little bit later on, that's now something that everyone's going to want to do. Why not? You know, and that is going to require that buttons are labeled properly, that images are accessible, all that sort of thing. Otherwise, you can't say what you see. There's no point saying.
That's right. Actually, Robin, it's quite funny, because you often hear people almost apologize for the fact that, oh, well, look, if you really want this really great feature, of course it's in accessibility, so you'll have to go in there and use it quietly. It's almost like there's some sort of shame associated with the fact that you're going to be using something from the accessibility panel, for God's sake. And I laugh every time you hear it on different types of podcasts around the internet, a couple of the mainstream ones in particular. they're almost like they had to make an excuse, like, oh, I don't know why this good feature has been put in accessibility. So hopefully with iOS 13 and particularly Apple pushing forward with voice control and so on, that, and the fact that accessibility is more further up, it's under general now in the main settings screen, it's going to make it a lot more obvious. I just wish to some extent we get away from the word accessibility, maybe call it, I don't know, personalization or some other generic word that doesn't have the stigmatism attached to the word accessibility.
You see, I agree with you, right? I agree with you on that, but then I'm torn because I also see, on a slightly different topic perhaps, more generally around disability, people trying to move away from the word disability now. I see more and more of this. You hear about differently abled and, you know, capable, not disabled, and all this stuff. And it's all very wonderful and lovely. But what it does is it kind of detracts from the disability. And I'm not saying that we should constantly go on about our disability. But what I worry about is that if we forget what the issues are around disability, and I'm not saying us, but I mean the wider public, then that we run the risk of, over time, the message gets diluted, and so therefore does the accessibility. If we dilute too much, do we actually create more problems for ourselves going forward? Actually, you know, the fact that accessibility is up there is great. We just need to get people to think differently about the word accessibility. Let's not change the word.
Rather than going into great detail about what disabled people like to call themselves, and that is a massive discussion in itself, I would rather like to think that everybody is on a spectrum and we're all in it together, guys, you know, so let's think about accessibility as being for all of us.
But yeah, I mean, but mind you, I mean, I tend to agree with Stephen. I mean, if somebody says, like, you know, I'm low vision, well, okay, you're low vision without your glasses on, and I agree. I mean, there should be a spectrum anyway. I mean, like you said earlier on, Robin, you're temporarily disabled at any single time, you know, almost every single day, depending on what you're doing. You could have had a car accident, you couldn't be wearing your glasses, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, but look, I mean, overall, I just think it's great. And hopefully the more people start using this stuff, then the more the stigmatism attached to that horrible word, apparently, will get better and better over time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too philosophical about it because it is a tech show. But, you know, I do think these things matter. I do think these things, I think words matter, especially in this day and age, you know, the meaning of things and the words that are banded around these days. Just, you know, I don't like hearing differently abled and all the rest of it. That's just a personal thing. You know, if you're disabled, you're disabled, right? Let's not try and dilute it. I don't want to label myself either, but I am what I am. And, you know, the idea that differently abled or, you know, well, you're not disabled to me, it's like, well, I am. It doesn't change anything. I always remember someone saying in a TED talk, I always remember this, it was a woman who was in a wheelchair, and she said that she was told, you know, have faith and belief. That's, you know, that is what will get you through. And she said, I can have all the faith and belief I like, but I'll still get to the bottom of a set of stairs, and no matter how much faith and belief I've got, I cannot magic myself up those stairs. And it's about realizing the disability. And I think that's part of where I'm going with this argument, that, you know, we've got to think about it, understand it. And it, from a developer point of view, from that sort of geek perspective, sitting there writing the app, if you can have a bit of understanding about why it is important that these apps work for disabled people, what that experience is like. We've all gone into apps and we've all done this where you go through an app, and I remember going once actually online on a website that actually dropped me to the very bottom of the page as soon as I arrived on it, and I'm thinking, what, how does that work? And, you know, I had to navigate all the way back up to the top, and I'm thinking, that's ridiculous. And of course contacted the developer immediately to say, look, could you fix that? And they're like, oh, right, okay, I get it now. I understand that you probably don't want to start at the bottom of the page, so we'll change the focus when you arrive. And it's just those little changes that make the difference. And maybe that's on us. Maybe that is just on us as individuals to, you know, if we can, not everybody can, not everybody will, but those of us who can should contact developers, website developers, app developers, and say, look, this is wrong, or this needs to be changed to be better for everybody. But that's the one thing about apps, incidentally, and I think the final point I'll say on this is that from my perspective, I don't know about you guys, but from my perspective, the app thing has changed my experience of the web, where, you know, the web itself can be difficult. It's easier now than it was, but it still can be difficult from times. I'll often refer to the app if a company's got an app, I'll rather go
Definitely.
There on an iPhone as opposed to the website. I just seem to have half the problems you have with Amazon, Robin, but, you know. I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying it's, you know, I just have different experiences of it, but I'd certainly prefer the app to the website.
I mean, that was the revolution of the iPhone, that we, you mentioned about, you know, you can't magic yourself up the stairs, and that's the social model. Whether we consider ourselves disabled or not, or differently abled, you know, at the end of the day, we need to get up the stairs, or we need to be able to, you know, do what we need to do online if we're blind, for example. And Apple mainstreamed that. We were no longer kind of second class citizens. We had exactly the same more or less opportunities on that device as everybody else. And that, because we were then able to be in the mobile world, that ushered in greater simplicity, utility with the app environment. The mobile environment is just easier to use than the desktop environment. You know, it's cleaner, it's much more distilled down. Much more thought has gone into making it a really, you know, simple experience, because people are operating it in a very different environment. So we're all taking advantage of that. And I would see that smart speakers are the next step again in simplicity. So yeah, you know, the mobile phone should not be underestimated in the impact that it's had on disabled people.
Just one final point, David, from you on this VoiceOver at 10 on the iPhone. I had my wobble about 5 years in, thinking, my worry is that I get so used to this and Apple pull the plug on it or start to just forget about it a little bit. It's like, oh yeah, we've done it, now let's move on. 10 years in, I don't have that fear, because I genuinely believe in, and this new edition of iOS coming out this year, iOS 13, the operating system, of course, on the iPhone, that is going to be even more feature-filled with accessibility tools. Do you share that view that Apple are on this and it's just part of their value now, and that's the end of it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, every time I brought out a new product, so we had the iPhone, then we had the iPad, and I can't remember where the iPod Touch came in, and then we had the Apple Watch and the Apple TV and the HomePod, et cetera, et cetera. So every time Apple has innovated and brought in a new product, I mean, the naysayers are going, oh, God, here we go. This is going to be the real thing now. They're going to forget about accessibility, or it's coming down later, or just wait till next year. But no, ever since we had, you know, really VoiceOver on the Mac back in 2005, and then we had, or 2004, I can't remember the exact date, but then 2009 with VoiceOver on the iPhone, Apple has never looked back. So I'm just looking forward to new products that I know will be 100% accessible from the word go, out of the box. And Apple's never dropped the ball yet, and I can't see them actually stopping anytime near in the future. The lady that I started working with back in 2009, I'm still consulting with her and working with her even now 10 years later. So for a person to be working at Apple for that length of time, just focusing on accessibility, is also pretty wonderful as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a fantastic time to be using technology, no matter who you are, frankly. But, you know, if you're blind, then, you know, this is definitely a good time to be using technology and getting into it. Right, look, we could talk about this for hours, but we actually want to focus on some other stories that have been happening. Of course, WWDC and more. So let's get into the news.
News from the internet.
And I want to start off with one. Guys, I am a huge Netflix fan, and one of the series I was most looking forward to was Black Mirror, which I always enjoy. It just really intrigues me. Now, I know this is no interest to Robin whatsoever, because Robin doesn't understand what a television is, or indeed the value of it. You crazy person! No, I mean, you know, look, it's up to every individual. But for me, I am a big Netflix fan, and Black Mirror came along. And first of all, I was disappointed on two counts. One, there was only three episodes. What's that about? And secondly, no audio description. Oh, come on, Netflix. Anyway, good news, an update for you. If you haven't been in to check yet, Black Mirror now has audio description. Whew. And it's an old friend of R&IB, Veronica Hicks, in fact, who is the voice. So I emailed her promptly to say, what took you so long, Veronica? Come on. Don't think it was her, in fairness. But thankfully, it is now there. A few weeks later than planned, apparently Netflix have apologised and said this will not happen again. We shall see. Interesting, we talked about, you know, how universal design is so important. And Netflix has done its bit. Whether you're a fan, like, you know, Robin, you're not a huge fan of television, but you at least accept the fact that, you know, what Netflix have done in trying to make all of their content accessible is a good thing.
Absolutely.
But at the same token, you know, it shows how much it is loved. And this is what I'm really pleased about. There was so much uproar about it on Twitter, people contacting us here at Tech Talk, you know, people getting in touch with RNIB directly saying, come on, what's happened to this? That shows that it's being used, that it's wanted. And, you know, the more we do that, the better. We've got to let people know, companies know when it's not working for us. So that is my weekend sorted. But anyway, let's talk about WWDC. I know we did mention it last week. We talked a lot about it. But Robin, I know there's a few other things you wanted to pick up because I was talking so much about voice control. I still think it's a great feature and I think it will have a major impact on us as blind people. But I'll talk about that in a minute. You've got some other things you want to pick up on.
Yeah, I just felt like we needed to be complete in the set of main features that were covered. And so the things that we didn't cover last week, I'll briefly go over. And guys, just jump in if you've got any comments about any of these. So if we start with the remaining features in iOS 13 that we didn't touch upon last week. So Memojis, these are animojis that are made to look like yourself.
Terrible.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Some people with low vision might, or, you know, some vision might be into that. But you can only create them on phones that have Face ID because they need that 3D camera. But you can actually share them to your other devices and you can send Memoji stickers from your other devices.
Oh, come on. I mean, look, I'm not against this because of some kind of against the sighted world thing. I just think, what a waste of time. People, is this really what people have got to do with their time, is sit and make stickers of themselves?
Where's the child in you?
Oh, I grew up, David. I moved on.
Some people might feel about Memojis the way you feel about Netflix, because I can't, you know, TV doesn't do it for me. So, but anyway.
Oh, dear.
So Photos, the Photos app, is going to see lots of changes in its appearance, in its UI, user interface. So watch out for that. AirPod sharing. So you can now link two sets of AirPods to the same device.
Yes.
And there's huge updates to Siri in what you can drive through Siri. And this is kind of linked in with the voice control that we talked about before, but it's also linked in with Shortcuts. Shortcuts is now going to be an app that is bundled with the OS. And there are huge implications there, not just that everyone will get it, and hence developers will give it a lot more attention, but also because developers can have guaranteed that the Shortcuts support will be there, because otherwise, if it was an app in the App Store, then they couldn't rely on people actually having downloaded it. So we're going to see a massive proliferation of how you can drive your apps by Siri.
Yeah, this is a good thing, because I'll be honest, when Siri Shortcuts came out, I remember looking at the app, I downloaded it, and some of the guys I talked to were like, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. It's going to be amazing. It's going to change the world, the way we use our phone. We can do this, we can do that. And then they're trying to explain to me how to build a shortcut. And I'm sitting here thinking, why am I doing all the work here? You know, these developers can do this. I'm not sitting here building shortcuts day and night. You know, I want to just use the thing. And that's kind of, I think they've kind of got this, Apple, that a lot of people didn't really know, A, what to do, and B, when they did realize what to do, thought, I'm not doing that. You can do that. You know, that's your thing. So, you know, I think it's good that they're developing it. I think it's good that Siri Shortcuts will kind of become suggested to you as you use apps. You know, you could do this quicker by doing this. I'm lazy. That's what I want. All right. I don't want to do anything more than I have to do. I have enough grief in my life. I don't need any more. There, I've said it. I'm speaking for all of us, all us lazy people. I'm standing up for us. I'm the only one. That's because I'm just beyond that lazy point.
If you look at the suggested shortcuts in the settings, the things it offered you, you know, send that exact same text or email that you've just sent to that same person again. And, you know, why would anyone?
Yeah, do that.
I mean, very occasionally. So it wasn't particularly useful. That's all going to change now. Now it can prompt you for input halfway through running a shortcut. So you can say, you know, send an email to someone and they'll say, what do you want the subject to be? You know, what do you want the body to be? All that sort of thing. But not just an email. A WhatsApp message, you know, whatever it might be, it's now going to be able to prompt you for input as well. And when it's just going to run a simple shortcut, it doesn't flash up the shortcuts app anymore because it's now integrated into the system. So it'll feel like a more seamless experience as well. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Actually, one thing there that caught my attention too, Robin, was the fact that, and I think it was when they talked about the AirPods, running two AirPods at the same time, that when you come back in, you listen to your AirPods, you can transfer your music or your phone call or your podcast over to your HomePod if you wanted to.
That's
also really powerful.
Tap it near it, and then you can take your music away. You can lift it off the HomePod and take it out with you on your phone.
Very nice.
But actually, in addition to that, you've got a new feature which has kind of not been talked about, possibly because of AirPods. You can have Bluetooth split now. I think that's what they call it, where you can sort of send two signals from your iPhone out to two different Bluetooth devices. Now, this intrigues me a little bit because I used an app for a while called Boss Jock, which disappeared, and it now become Backpack Studio, which is like a, how do you describe it? It's like an app that you, it's like a soundboard. You know, you've got all your pieces of audio on there, and you know, if I wanted to do the show with different pieces of audio playing in, I could just tap on the screen and it would play it. But of course, the problem is, how do you know what you're tapping on? The app is fully accessible with VoiceOver, but anyone will know that if I plugged that directly into the mixing desk here and tried to play it, you would hear VoiceOver playing through, which isn't very good. I wonder if it would be possible on these apps, maybe not immediately, but eventually, to be able to sort of divert VoiceOver to one piece of hardware, maybe an AirPod, and then the actual output to something else. That would be incredible. You know, so that could be where this goes, I think.
Fingers crossed. So iPad OS.
Don't all jump in at once on that one, then.
Oh, look, we absolutely agree. Both of us agree perfectly well.
Excellent. That's what I like. That was the right answer. Right, okay. Sorry, Robin, on you go.
So, yeah, iPad OS is now a separate thing. So I'm pretty sure it's still kind of the basic version of iOS, but when it sees that it's being run on an iPad, it unlocks a number of things that only the iPad can do. But they have rebranded it iPad OS, and it's going to be separate from now on. And that has got a whole bunch of stuff in 13, iPad OS 13. So they've jumped straight to 13 with this new version of OS. And that is lots of windows. You can have all your apps running in different windows, split screen. So it's kind of opened up the whole split screen pro working environment. You can even have multiple spaces, which is similar to on the Mac, where you've got lots of kind of arrangements of different apps that you like to use, but you want to kind of set those in stone and switch between different configurations of multiple apps. That kind of sounds a bit weird, but for people that are familiar with spaces, it's like multiple desktops on Windows 10, for example, virtual desktops. You've got a complete change to the home screen of the iPad. The icons are much more closely packed together, so you can fit more in, icons or folders. And you can pin widgets from minus one screen. You can now pin those to the home screen as well.
He's excited about a widget on a home screen. Bluetooth splitting is like whatever.
And there are lots of new gestures for selecting text. You can basically drag your finger over text to select it. You can use three fingers to pinch together to copy it, like dragging it off the page. You can spread three fingers out to paste it somewhere else. You can double tap on
it. He was demonstrating it didn't work the first time.
No, I think there's well, it is still beta, isn't it? So,
but actually selecting text on an iPhone and on an iPad for me is an absolute nightmare. So I'm still learning that. It seems a very convoluted process that could be improved. It sounds like it might be getting there now.
Yeah, and I mean, we were talking about the sort of history of VoiceOver over the last 10 years or so. I mean, it wasn't, text selection didn't come along for ages, you know, that text selection item in the rotor, and even still it is quite involved. But yeah, you can double tap on a word and it will select the word, triple tap on a word and it will select the sentence, and quadruple tap and it will select the paragraph. So there are some new, really nice features there. And then the biggie is external storage you can plug into your iPad.
That's good news.
Yeah, a USB drive, a spinning drive, a camera, all that sort of thing. And it will import straight into whichever app you're wanting the file to go into. You don't have to go through Photos, for example, if you want to import images into a third-party app. So, yeah, loads of main changes there.
You didn't mention Sidecar, which I thought was quite interesting. Sidecar is where you can now use your iPad as a second screen. Now, at first, you would think, well, what does that matter to a blind person? But one of the things that was highlighted at the event was that, say, for example, and this is obviously aimed at the sighted world, if you're using one of those photography apps and you want to draw, say, with your Apple Pencil, you'd be able to do that despite the fact that the app itself is on the Mac. Which is kind of, so just to give some context to this for people who aren't as geeky as us, you know, what they've done at WWDC is announced that essentially through this project, I think it was originally called Marzipan, mm-hmm. It's now got a different name.
Catalyst.
But Catalyst, that's it. And what you can do is the developers can develop the apps for the macOS platform and the iPad platform is the same one. So, you know, if you develop it for one, it's for the other as well. And what that's meant is that these apps will be able to be used essentially on both devices simultaneously. So you can have, I don't know what the app would be, but say the photo app, you would have it on your Mac and then you can sort of drag it over to your iPad screen, and despite your Mac not having touch input, your iPad obviously does. So you can use that. And I'm kind of wondering about the accessibility implications of that for us. So an app that you might use on the Mac that you might think, I wish I could just touch this, you know, get to where I want to be on the screen or whatever, just drag it to your sidecar, your iPad, and use it that way. I don't know. I mean, I'd be interested to try that out.
The way they were talking about Project Catalyst was the fact that it's going to be all the same routines underneath the hood. So literally to produce a Mac version or most, you just basically check a checkbox and it takes care of all the libraries and routines and functions. So I would imagine there'd be some type of accessibility going on the iPad. Says, okay, I've just received this object from the Mac. I know about this object. It does blah, 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 blah. And therefore, if I'm using accessibility on the iPad, I can interact with those objects because I know about them from the Mac side of things as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge question mark. So macOS Catalina, it's called 10.15 is the new version. And you're absolutely right. It's got this sidecar thing in there, which is a second screen. And now, is the Mac going to be sending pixels to the iPad, in which case, you know, that's a second screen, right enough? Or is it going to be, you know, like you were saying, when you drag the app over there or you make it go to the sidecar view in the iPad, is it going to then be an app that's running on the iPad and you've now got VoiceOver, you know, iOS or iPadOS running VoiceOver on that app? Or is it going to be an extension to the VoiceOver that you're using on your macOS? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I think it would be the iPad that would do the VoiceOver, wouldn't it?
Who knows?
Hopefully. I mean, the other thing I got really excited about was the fact that Twitter, they sort of announced that Twitter was going to make their version for the Mac again based on Project Catalyst, and thought, I use Twitter all the time, so thank goodness I'm going to have Twitter back on the Mac, and I've got Twitterific, but it's a little bit wobbly lately on the Mac. Mm. So I'm really pleased to see that Twitter's putting its little tweet or its little beak forward and now being available on Mac Catalina.
I agree with you because Twitter has been an interesting experience for me. I kind of jump up and down with the website. Occasionally I'll try it and I get annoyed with it. I did buy Twitterific for the phone ages ago and, you know, I use it on the Mac as well. But you're right, it is wobbly. Just on Facebook point of view, do you know, I found this app, you guys probably know all this anyway, but for those who don't, Menu Tab for Facebook is the one I've been using at the moment. I think it's great because essentially all it is a sort of mobile version of Facebook built into an app, which you can navigate through, you know, if you've got Quick Nav on, this is on the Mac I'm talking about, you can navigate by heading, you can sort of easily find buttons on it just by using the standard navigation commands. It's a really nice little app. So,
yeah, now we may well see Facebook going over from the, you know, iOS to macOS because, like David was saying, Twitter, they, even though you can tick a box that says now run this, make it a Mac app, if you want to add in menus and that sort of thing, you know, full menu support, then that can take a tiny bit longer. So yeah, it can literally be as simple as ticking a box. But Twitter at the announcement said that within a couple of days, they had a full running, you know, macOS version of the Twitter app. And I'm guessing that is because they've really gone to town and added in all the menus and keyboard support and that sort of thing. So yeah, Facebook, absolutely. I'm sure they'll do it. I'm sure they will.
Okay, well, look, there's lots we could talk about, I'm sure, but we are running short of time, so I want to get to some emails.
email. We get email. We get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
And we'll kick off on our emails. Just two, actually, to make note of here, because we are short of time. But I want to mention an email that came in from Toby, who got in touch. He was trying out an audio editor called Pro Tools First. This is a free version of Pro Tools. Both heard of that one?
Nope.
No.
Right, okay. So Pro Tools, you'll know the software, right? So Pro Tools has been around for years.
Yeah.
And on the Mac, it certainly was one of the most accessible for a long time. Then Logic came along, and then other people started using other types of professional audio software. This is mainly used, I guess, for musicians. Serious audio editors with serious money will play around with Pro Tools. But there is a version called Pro Tools First, which is completely free. My favourite price. However, free doesn't always mean good. And from an accessibility point of view, Toby, despite originally getting in touch with us and asking what our thoughts were, he had actually gone off and tried it in the meantime. And he's come back to us and said, look, it may be a wonderful app. Maybe with people who've got low vision might be able to manage it. But if you've got no vision at all and you rely on accessibility, Pro Tools First is not going to work for you, because a number of the settings menus that allow you to make the app more accessible and do more with it using the keyboard just aren't in the free edition. That's a shame, but it's something I'm going to actually contact the makers of Pro Tools about, because if it's something they could just add in, they shouldn't consider accessibility a premium feature. And you're talking about £600 for the Pro Tools software, so you know, it's a big jump from free to paid just to get accessibility. That was his... interestingly, a number of people who are on the Pro Tools Facebook forums that Toby had been talking to, who are blind, were saying, just buy the full edition. Don't even bother with First. It is just too much hassle. Just buy the full edition. But, of course, if you're just starting out in the world of audio, then I don't think you probably want to spend £600 on a piece of software. So he's not had much luck. He is interested, though, in Reaper, which he's heard about, and he wondered about that. Now, I know from my own experience that Reaper is possibly one of the most accessible we have at the moment, but I'd be interested in you guys. I know that, Robin, you used Audacity, which is free.
Yep.
You're a big advocate for Audacity.
Huge, and it's a massively powerful multi-track editor, and it's got so many extensions. The community that are developing for it are very, very active, and it's very, very accessible. So the question in my mind is always, you know, what do the paid ones offer that Audacity doesn't? I don't know the answer to that, but I would always recommend people look at Audacity first and see if it meets their needs, because it's free and really accessible.
What about you, David? What are you using?
From the word go, I've always used Amadeus Pro on the Mac, so...
Okay.
That's been my tried and pride for the last, I can't remember when I actually first started using it, but it feels like I've been using Amadeus Pro for a long time now. So that's the one that I tend to use, and it just works. So I keep using it.
It's fully accessible.
Yeah. So what do you use? I mean, what are you doing? Are you doing single track editing, multi-track?
Single track.
Single track. Right. Okay. Because I grew up with a program called Cool Edit Pro, which had been around for a very long time, and then it became Adobe Edition. Adobe Edition in and of itself is not a very accessible product. Just putting it out there, guys, because, you know, if you were thinking of buying it, I wouldn't bother from an accessibility point of view anyway. It's a brilliant audio editor, don't get me wrong, but it's not accessible. And the most recent versions have been even less accessible. Even basic menus are not accessible. What I've done at the moment and the way I get around my editing is I use Adobe Edition version 3. I think we're up to 6 now, maybe even 7. But I know that I use 3 because it's basic enough to allow me to manipulate the keyboard shortcuts, controls, and be able to tell it to do certain things using the keyboard that I need to do. But, you know, a classic example that irritates the life out of me is when I'm editing, I've got no idea how long a file is. So the only way I know is to save the file, close it, go into Windows Explorer, find the file, go to Properties, get to the length of time. Oh, look, it's way too long. Right, back again, and, you know, round the houses as we go. So it's not the most accessible. It's not easy. So that I've decided to spend a bit of time getting into Reaper. That's what I've begun to do. And I'm using a series of podcasts from a guy called Garth Humphreys, who produced them for a podcast called Audio Pizza. I highly recommend, if you're thinking about getting into audio editing and you're thinking of something like Reaper, check that out. Alternatively, I think Audacity sounds brilliant. My issue is I have not found, and I'm hoping David's going to say, well, I've got one here. I haven't found a brilliant guide to using Audacity. There's just nothing I can find out there that tells me how to use it with no vision.
I haven't either.
That's the issue, isn't it? That's a real issue.
Yeah, but the help files are really helpful. And in the settings, which are all completely accessible, there is a keyboard section. And there's just a big long list of everything that you can do from the keyboard. And you can reassign them there and then if you don't like those ones. So in that list is basically how you use Audacity, because it's like, okay, this is the keystroke for this. This is the keystroke for this. So really, really good.
Okay. Quick mention to Donald, who got in touch as well. He's asking about the Braille Me Braille display. Where can we get it in the UK? Good question, Donald. The answer is Computer Room Services. You'll find details online for that, or I can send you those details separately via email. In fact, I'll just reply to you, Donald, and do that. So you've got the details of the company. It's £480. That's how much it's costing, based on the price when I looked at it today. It's a really interesting Braille display, although David was telling us just before we came on air that it's a bit noisy, like the Orbit, or maybe more than the Orbit.
It definitely is. It's a lot more noisy than the Orbit. I would also say to people, please feel the Braille display before you make a decision, because it's actually very, very, very prominent. It's like reading a street sign in Braille. So it stands out quite remarkably. And it also...
Signage Braille, they call it, isn't it?
Signage Braille, that's the one. And it also does a really weird thing, is when you plug the power into it, it doesn't tell you that it's charging or not. You've actually got to go in and do either a shortcut or go to the main menu and check the battery level. It doesn't pop up like the Orbit does and say charging or, you know, USB or the AC adapter has been taken out. So that was a bit weird. And there is an option about, finally, when you turn it on, it makes a very, very loud beep sound, because apparently being blind, we're also deaf. And you can turn it off in settings, by the way, if you don't like the loud beep.
Wow. Guys, listen, thank you so much for being on the show this week. It's been great. And David, thank you for coming on as our special guest this week. Come back soon. We need to talk about so much more. Things I wanted to ask you we didn't get a chance to, so you must come back again soon.
Yep, no problem at all.
Robin, as always, thank you for being here.
Thanks. We have a few more WWDC things that we'll mop up next week.
More mopping up to be done. What a mess we leave behind. And that's it for our show. Thank you so much for listening. Email in techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We'll catch you next time.